George Zilatori, October 24th, 1992. Okay. Let me see. Starting with, where is your family from? Were you born in San Diego?
I was born in San Diego. My family were from Tennessee.
Tennessee.
My mother was from Chattanooga, and her family were all businessmen. And my father was from Knoxville, where his father was superintendent of schools. So he was in the education business.
Oh, I see. Did he come here for that?
And my father and mother came here just very shortly before I was born, maybe 3 or 4 months before I was born.
Were they teaching here? Were they teaching here?
No. My father and mother both died before he was grown. He was about 14 or 15, so he didn't get to complete his education at the time. And he studied engineering, and he came here as engineer for the Timken Building, which was at 6th and E. It's still there, but I don't know what it's called. It's at 6th and E.
And he was part of that?
And he was engineer for it.
Wow.
Later, he became manager of it. And then the gas company bought it, and they bought him with it. So he worked for it. It was one of the superintendents of the gas company for a number of years before he retired.
Okay.
But he also had an avocation.
Okay. Why did you attend San Diego State College?
Oh, I guess because it was there. That was the Depression days.
Uh-huh.
And we all rather took it for granted we would go to college. And there it was, and there were 5 of us, and so it was good to have a state college close at hand.
Do you think that it was more opportunity going to college than not going to college?
Well, I always feel we go to college to learn the skills we need for what we want to do, not just to be going.
Well,
and I wanted to be a teacher.
And that you
and
did.
It required that.
You became a teacher?
Yeah, I became a teacher.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. And your major was education then?
Yes.
Okay. Let me think here. You started in 1929, am I right?
Yes.
So you went to the old one also?
For a few months.
That was on Normal Street?
Well, I guess the other street is Normal. It's really at the corner of Park Boulevard in Oklahoma. Where Oklahoma ends and Park Boulevard starts is where the buildings are.
What did you think of that school?
Well, it was about to fall down. But it was picturesque. There was a big building with pillars. It was quite impressive in the old style.
It looked really pretty in pictures I've seen of
mm-hmm.
it. But it was getting kind of old?
Yes.
What did you think when they were going to build it? The school where it is now.
Well, we were excited about it, but everyone thought it was out of this world. Yes,
it was too far to.
It was too far, and it also was very rugged. When we first went out, they had to have on rainy days. They had to have a tractor there to get us out of the mud. And once we found a snake in the little theater, and it was a little bit pioneering.
Well, there was what was around it at that time.
Mostly sagebrush, mostly.
That was it?
Mm-hmm.
So, at that part of the county, was anything really past that?
maybe not at that time. I can remember when there was nothing past 40th Street, so I don't remember when, but there wasn't much beyond there, no.
Because one of the paper I'm going to be doing is about the construction of that school and the problems that they faced. The construction of the new school, the new college. I was just wondering, did you think that the facilities were better or the classes were better than the old one?
Well, the facilities were certainly better.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very large then. It ended at the silos. And had very little behind that. one of my friends and I sold peanuts and popcorn at a track meeting. We raised the very first money for landscaping out there. There was no landscaping, but the sagebrush. And we were kind of failed. We stopped that trend of raising money. And the music department, in which I minored, did each year gave an operetta to raise money for just landscaping.
Oh, I see. So, but you basically liked the new college when it was there. When it was built, you liked it over there?
Yes, we thought the silos weren't very pretty. But you came to accept them as part of your school and you learned to like them. We didn't think they were, I think they're Moorish, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
What part of town were you living in at that time?
I lived in National City.
Oh, so you had a pretty good drive.
Yes, and we had a carpool. There were some friends from Chula Vista that we had a carpool with.
I see. How long did it take to get there?
No recollection of that.
I can't remember. But the lead in from Elkhorn Boulevard to the school was the roads were pretty shaky.
At the beginning, yes, there were no houses in there, and it was pretty dirt roads.
Mm-hmm. What is your fondest memory of San Diego State? Worst memories?
Had some good ones. One of them that I enjoyed a lot was when they went up the hill to put the big S on Black Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of the team, but I was the part that stayed down at the base, and much as I like to climb mountains, I was part of the stay down and fix food for them down at the base of it. But that was fun.
The whole school turned out for that?
As I recall, I'm not sure, but I think they did. That was a big event. And we had a lot of... at the time I went to State College, it was State College there. What was this like, sort of an advanced San Diego High School? And if you came from San Diego High School, you were in. If you came from any of the county high schools, you were out. Now, I was from Sweetwater, and I was used to being a leader, and that bothered me that they didn't recognize the girls. And, well, I was particularly involved in the women's activities. I don't know about the men part of it, but they didn't recognize those that were leaders or were good material.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember putting on a program trying to show off their talents. It wasn't very successful. I wouldn't say that I made any landmark, but I was trying to make a point that there were outstanding people that could come from a county high school.
Why do you suppose that there was that difference?
Well, a San Diego high school fed a large percentage of the school.
Oh.
They didn't come from far and near then like they do now. Mm-hmm. And mostly it was just the large group was in San Diego high school, and they all knew each other. They knew each other's abilities. They knew each other's records. And it was a natural thing,
mm-hmm.
because it was the one that fed the most people there.
So it was most of the people that attended that time were from San Diego High School.
Absolutely.
Okay.
At least it seemed that way.
And then those on the fringes were left out a little bit?
Yes.
I see.
Okay. Because they weren't known. And the leaders, from naturally, they chose each other as leaders. They knew each other.
I see. Was it was that way at both campuses?
Well, I had such a short time at the other, and I was a very lowly freshman. What I thought or did didn't amount
to. Okay. Do you have any favorite professor or anything that you remember?
Dr. Alcott was one of my favorites.
Alcott.
He was vice president of the college, but he taught classes, and he was a dear, dear, modest man. He didn't blow his own horn at all, but he was very thoughtful and he taught poetry and Shakespeare and things like that. And I remember saying I had a classroom when I was a freshman, and we didn't appreciate him. We were too smart for him at that stage. And later on, I came to appreciate him. And then when I was a senior, I I was looking forward to having another class when I had a class, but I was doing my student teaching. And this was when they first started using the city schools for teaching. They always had a lab school at the college, but they started using the city schools, and I was in one of the city schools at it was so new to everyone, and it was very hard on everyone. Everyone was shaky and weepy, and at least at the school where I was. But when I told Dr. Alcott, I felt sorry that I wasn't doing as much in his class as I wanted to. And he said, well, poetry and 40 little active children don't go together very well. Yeah, I thought that was very understanding. I was very fond of Eve Hammock, who was in the education department. Mm-hmm. She had a wonderful sense of humor and a wonderful sense of proportion. And she liked me, so I guess I liked her. No, but she was good. And the one that we all loved the most, all of us that were in that department, were Deborah Smith. It was Deborah Smith who taught music and directed the girls' chorus, or group of, I guess they called it then. And she was an outstanding and unusual woman, and we all just adored her.
What were you outside of school? I mean, like school activities besides the schooling. Were you involved in? You say you were in music?
Yes. And we the chorus that we had, our glee club that we had then, was outstanding in the Southern California area. You know, when we would compete, we would be first.
Oh, really?
And so that was fun. And we sang in a number of very interesting places, and we traveled a little, and not like they do now, but that was a biggie for us. And worked some in the drama department, not a lot, but some. I had been very active in high school, but I wasn't as active in college as I was in high school. And that I enjoyed very, very much. And I deliberately didn't join a sorority.
Right.
I was in a club. Another one of my favorite teachers was Gertrude Bell, who was head of the psychology department, and I minored in psychology and in English. And she promoted me to be president of that club, the club that she sponsored. I don't know what the name of it was now. And I agreed to it because I was interested in psychology. And then that became the first national sorority on the campus. They were all local before that. This was the first national one. And I went to the first meeting when they were blackballing people, and I couldn't take it. The hateful things they would say about each other, I just wouldn't take it. So I resigned. So I had made up my mind I wasn't going to. Before that, I didn't respond to the rushing because I felt that it was an expense my parents didn't need to have. And I had gotten along very well without. I don't like to have people pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. I like to be an individual, and I don't want to be known as such and such. I want to be me, and so I didn't belong to them. And I did refuse the first. I don't know what national sorority that was now. It didn't impress me that much, I guess.
But I've been reading some the old Aztecs. Uh-huh. It seems like a lot of people were involved in fraternities and...
Oh, yes. They were. I think the more small town you are, the bigger it becomes. Yes, they were very... And it was a hard step to take in a way, but I had a lot of friends in the music department and all, and I had identification through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was tapped for cap and gown when I was for people who contributed to the college, who gave unselfish service, is what they called it. And that was a distinction, because they tapped only 12 girls. And,
oh, wow.
And then later, each year they tapped somebody from the community who was a giving person in the community. And in 59, I was tapped for whatever, sponsor, the community sponsor.
I see. Kind of turning to San Diego, what was San Diego like?
It was heaven on earth. there was a Mr. Oh, what was his name? He owned a furniture store, and he had bonds made that were called Heaven on Earth because he was promoting San Diego. So that was what was said then. But I mean that literally. We had a little cabin in the mountains, 45 miles out, and we could go out there when it snowed and be in the snow. All of us had complexions that couldn't take the sun, so we'd go to the beach and have supper on the beach and at St. Lahoya Shores and swim at night and have the beach to ourselves.
Yeah.
We would go to Mexico and go fishing and abalone hunting. And, mm-hmm. We just had wonderful things. And there was room to do it, and we can't do that now.
Yeah. Was even like, you say you went to Mexico, was like Tijuana really small too?
Yes, it was small, and it wasn't dangerous like it is now. It isn't really safe to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dangerous now, but it wasn't then. We could go, and we camped on the beach, and that was my father, and my brother was here for his internship and at County Hospital. He graduated from State College, but he went on to SC for his medical degree, and while he was here as an intern, he and my father would take us, the fellows that he interned with and all, go down to Mexico. It was great.
So besides you guys went to the beach, what other things would you guys, would you do when you were in college for fun?
Well, one of the, my father as an avocation, where I told you, on the side, he studied, he got through correspondence school, he got a law diploma that we use in business. And at night school, he got a credential vocational teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the third one? Then he was asked to take over a little church at Nestor in California. You know where it is? It was the most southwestern church in the United States at the time.
Oh, really?
It's near Imperial Beach. It's
okay.
This way from Imperial Beach. And he took that little church and it had not been operating. Had, I think, about 7 people in the roll and about 15 in the Sunday school. And he built it up all the time, working for the gas company and putting us through college. Mm-hmm. He worked there, and we all worked with him. And they built, they remodeled the church, and it got a national prize for church beautification. The people from the gas company would come down and help him, the carpenters and electricians and things. And my father could do anything with his hands. And he remodeled the altar and the fire loft and things himself. Anyway, that was the center of our life in a lot of ways. And my boyfriend's father had a bunch of horses, and he used to ride horseback over those hills, and that was much fun. I was 17, and I taught a class of 12-year-old boys, and I'd go swimming with them and boating and horseback riding, and those were great days.
Was it popular to go to movies and...
This was before the days of television, of course. It wasn't with my family because, one thing that was expensive, that I would think.
Mm-hmm.
But we made our own entertainment. Father got a microphone and hooked it up to their loudspeaker, and we would do programs all the time. My sister played the piano by ear, I sang, and my brother would give French lessons and pseudo-French lessons, and we would just keep the family entertained all the time with our own activities. We camped a lot, we picnicked a lot. When I was a very little girl, the most fun I can remember is going down to the ferry, and yes, it was
Coronado.
Down where,
like Coronado, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And after we'd crossed the ferry, he would let us get out of the car and get on a streetcar, and they had, in Coronado they had this wide swath of green down the center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the streetcar ran down the center of that. And they had old cars, they were old even then, and the seats turned out, and your feet, you were sitting this way with your feet hanging out.
Oh, I see.
And it would rock and roll up to Tent City. And Tent City was up by Carnotta, by the hotel.
Okay.
And Tent City was the poor man's Carnotta Hotel. And they had built up tent things and then canvas and palm branches on the top. And, you know, we didn't go over there because we always had a place in the mountains. But we'd go over there to picnic. And then there was a big picnic pavilion. There was an outdoor swimming pool. There was a bandstand. It was a great place for a family to have a good time. And there was a merry-go-round there. And when I hear a streetcar and merry-go-round music, it really sends me. That was so much fun.
It seems like a lot of things you guys were doing was family-oriented.
Yes, very much. We were very family-oriented. My father was, he built us furniture that most of the house, we had twin beds before anyone had them. We had lights on our Christmas tree before anyone else because he wired them and did it himself. He would literally build Christmas trees. If we couldn't afford a Christmas tree, let him build one. And we had trains you could ride on, and we had blocks you could build whole cities with, all made to scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we had wonderful things, too. So we were more blessed than most, I think.
Did the Depression affect you guys?
I think it affected us positively. My father had work all during it, so we didn't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
We learned how to make do with what we had. Like nowadays, a girl would die rather than wear the same dress 2 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You had to.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember that I wore one dress 2 days, another dress 2 days, and then I had one day with another dress. But it was, and the Depression made people seek their own entertainment, picnicking, camping, and doing like we did, making our own, having our own fun, having neighbors and friends in, and playing cards, and, you know, just doing things that, I remember my husband was when he went into the Navy as a doctor, he was assigned first to, Cherry Point, which is Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this is where I knew him, that the young people would, they didn't have any, they'd go to each other's houses and entertain each other. And he became very close friends with two people who became top men in the Marines. Shoup was one of them, I've forgotten the other one.
Hmm.
But because they couldn't go out in the high plane or things. I think it taught us the value of money that you don't learn any other way. You cannot tell your children or grandchildren.
Unless you live it.
They don't want to hear it.
Uh-huh.
But you learn to make, to eat scraps, you learn to not waste, you learn to appreciate what you had. I think it did us a lot of good.
You know, does it seem like everybody was complaining about shortages of things or lack of money, or was everybody just trying their best?
I don't think we're as grubby as we are now. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had rationing,
mm-hmm.
and we would help each other with it,
mm-hmm.
and be proud if we didn't use all our tickets. Mm-hmm. I think there was more patriotism and certainly less grubby.
Yeah. Did you see an effect on the Depression had on San Diego? Like, was there a lot of homeless or...
No.
Or a lot of construction with the New Deal programs? Not really. San Diego basically, in the 30s, you think it stayed the same?
Well, I wasn't tuned into it too much.
Uh-huh.
And those were the days in the 30s of when Roosevelt was...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because my parents never oppressed us with financial problems.
Mm-hmm. Did your mom ever work?
No.
So your father was the only source of income, and he put you all five kids through school? And did he ever, that must have been something to him, huh?
He was very proud of his children. One time someone said, and he was a very brilliant man and very capable. As I've said, he could do all these things with his hands and he could do all this with his brain, and he was an excellent public speaker, and, you know, he just could do almost anything. And we always expected he did all the electrical work, all the plumbing, all everything in our house. And I think that he really had his values in the right place. And one time someone said to him, well, Rob, you could make $1 million, which was big money then, if you just do it. And he said, I already have $5 million. He had 5 children.
Did all of your brothers and sisters, what did you have? Did you have?
One boy, poor Lou, he never had none. In my father's family, all of the men, at least in the family, for 5 generations had been either teachers or doctors. So that was sort of traditional in our family, but no one pushed us to be either, ever. Mm-hmm. But my 3 sisters and I became teachers, and my brother became a doctor.
So. What do you think? Did all of you end up living here in San Diego, or after college?
No. Let me finish the college part, because that was a little bit interesting.
Okay.
Remember I said my father went to work at the Timken building.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about the Timken roller bearing, or ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Well, that was the Timken family, and there's the Timken art gallery down in Belleville Park now. Well, Mr. Bridges married one of the Timken girls, and he was the one who either owned or was in charge of the Timken building. So my father worked for Mr. Bridges, and the Timken interests and the Timken building. And during the Depression and the hard years, Mr. Bridges felt that father did more for him than he could repay, because father was so ingenious at working out things. And so when my oldest sister was ready for college, and she was ready at 16, Mr. and Mrs. Bridges put her through Pomona College. Now, their daughter had gone to Pomona College and had died while she was there. So they gave the Bridges Hall of Music and another Bridges Hall, which are at Pomona now, and in her memory and honor. And part of her memory and honor was to put my older sister through college, to Pomona College. So at 16, she went away to college. And then she helped my next sister, and my next sister helped me, and I gone down the line and helped each other.
I see. When you're saying when you were working, you helped?
I was teaching at Oklahoma when I was helping my brother.
I see. So you all pitched in to help each other out. I see. You taught in Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
What was the road going to El Cajon? Was it
Highway 8 went out there, but it was not like it is
now.
And there was one school in El Cajon. That was the elementary school on Main Street, the Valentine School.
Did you like teaching there?
Oh, I loved it.
Did you?
I taught there. I taught school in second grade, and I also directed their chorus. And then I had a very good chorus, obviously. Very good.
Let's see here. What tape I got. I think I'm going to turn it over.